You're listening to the Totally Useless Information Podcast on the Nick and Roy channel. Subscribe and share.
What was the loudest sound made in 1883?
Did Curious George have a tail or not? Is Curious George an ape or a monkey? Hi, I'm Nick.
And I'm Roy. And we scour the internet for information
you really don't need, or do you? So join us this week on the Totally Useless Information Podcast as we talk about expressions, some science, some history, and some animals. Join
totally
us.
Totally useless information. It's everything you never needed to know. By listening once a week, you get smarter than you think.
The Totally Useless Information Podcast, hosted by Nick and Roy.
Well, welcome to the Totally Useless Information Podcast.
Where do expressions come from?
I don't know where, I don't know where.
Where do expressions come from?
We want to know right now.
On the Totally Useless Information Podcast. Chapter 11. When you hear Chapter 11, you think bankruptcy. And you're thinking, why? Why is Chapter 11... Why does that mean bankruptcy?
Why, pray tell?
It's Nick, but thank you, pray tell. The United States Bankruptcy Code, which permits reorganization under the bankruptcy laws of the United States, Chapter 11 is available to every business, whether organized or corporation or partnership or sole partnership, and to individuals. Although it's most prominently used by corporate entities, Chapter 11 means bankruptcy because of the code in the United States. Now, if I write a book, I will intentionally skip Chapter 11.
That's funny. I heard some gossip today.
You did?
Gossip.
Did you hear?
Where did the term gossip come from? Well, gossip is one word, but it's derived from four words. And those four words are go, sip, some ale, gossip. So people would sit at the bar, drink a beer, and listen to other people's conversation, go either back to work or go home, sit at the table and say, you know what I heard? And the wife would say, oh, go on with your gossip. And it ends up turning to the word gossip.
That's not what I heard. Lipstick on a pig. To put lipstick on a pig is an expression used to convey the message that making something superficial or cosmetic changes is a futile attempt to disguise the undesirable nature of a product. You put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig.
Yes. Okay. This is a cool one. Freeze the balls off a brass monkey was the original term. Then it was termed freeze your balls off. Okay. Where does that expression come from? Get this one. I love this one. There was a plate with circles in the plate that the cannonballs were placed in on ships. Remember, the ship is going like this in the ocean. So a round ball is rolling all over the place. You got to stop them from rolling. So they created this plate, which they called the monkey. They'd say, bring over the monkey and load the monkey up with cannonballs. And so they'd place the balls into the circles so that they wouldn't be able to roll around. And then they would then begin to stack in a pyramid the balls on top of each other. And, of course, the balls would hold the rest of the balls in. Well, they found out that in the iron thing called the monkey was made out of iron. And when they put the iron cannonballs in it, they would rust. And the rust would hold the cannonballs in there, and they couldn't get them out. So they began making it out of brass, which would not rust to the iron cannonballs. Thus, they'd say, you're not going to freeze the balls off a brass monkey.
Well, all I know is that if I had rusty balls, it would hurt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I forget. Do you golf? Are you a golfer?
Oh, my God. I'm 20,000 under par.
Really? Yes.
I have no idea what golf. I played golf like four times.
I'm an avid golfer, and I taught Tiger Woods how to get the ball into the elephant's mouth. Now you've heard the expression a mulligan. A mulligan in golf means do-over shot, right?
Yes.
Here's a mulligan. I get expression. What is mulligan? What's that?
I get five per game.
Five per game. You know what? Just do the whole game over. Never mind one shot. Just do the whole game over.
Right.
So the USGA Museum, United States Golf Association Museum, mentions a fellow by the name of David Mulligan.
No.
He loved to play golf at the St. Lambert Country Club in Montreal, Canada, up here in Canada, during the 1920s. Mulligan let it rip one day, when he shot the ball, I mean. No, he wasn't happy with the results, so he re-teed and hit it again. So according to the legend, he called it a correction shot. So he put his golfing buddies behind him and said, hang on, I'm going to do this again. And although there was a better name that his buddies wanted to call it, they just dubbed it a mulligan. It's a do-over shot.
Wow. Holy mackerel. Holy mackerel. Where does that expression come from? It's very, very simple. Yeah. People did not want to use biblical terms or the Lord's name in vain. So some people would say, holy excuse my language, or holy Mary, like you'd say, holy Jesus. They didn't right. want to say that. So they said, holy mackerel. And it stuck.
Holy mackerel, he swore.
Where do expressions come from?
I don't know where, I don't know where.
Where do expressions come from? We want to know right now.
On the Totally Useless Information Podcast, thank you for joining us week after week. We really appreciate it. If you'd like to send us an email, it's simple. It's TUIpodcast@outlook.com.
Yes, please do.
I'm in Toronto, Canada. Roy is in Florida. And both locations, ironically enough, have these roaming around the streets.
Animal, crazy animal.
Love that kitty cat.
Meow. I'm doing all funny stuff with my eyes. I'm like,
So what do you got in terms of animals on your list?
The average dog has better eyesight than humans.
What?
The average dog
mm-hmm.
can also hear, other than you, Nick. The average right. dog has better eyesight than humans, although the human eye can see color, and dogs cannot see color very well. So they have sharper eyesight, but have inability to see color. By the way, I am colorblind. Yeah, that's a beautiful orange shirt you're wearing.
Well, I was going to say, do you see, because you're colorblind, do you see everything like an I Love Lucy episode?
I don't know what that means.
See everything in black and white like they used to have on TV?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I can see some colors, but I'm colorblind where like browns and blues and blacks and blues kind of the darker colors meld together. Yeah.
Okay.
I dated an African-American woman for 3 years and thought she was white.
It took you 3 years to realize that.
And okay. Believe me. No.
I'll give you my.
Don't edit that out. Don't edit that out, because I think that African American people can take a good joke. So don't edit that out.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'll give you my teaser.
She was wonderful, by the way.
That's not what she said about you. Is Curious George a monkey or an ape? Here's my teaser. Curious George, remember the Curious George stories? You know, the Curious George went to the zoo. Curious George with the man with the yellow hat.
Mm-hmm.
Trench coat? Yeah, the trench coat, yes. They called Curious George the little monkey. And they had TV shows and, of course, books and movies. So Living New World monkeys all have tails. Apes, however, gorillas, chimps, and orangutans lack tails, as do humans. We don't have tails. We used to have tails a long time ago. But this is an important distinction because Curious George has no tail, suggesting that he is an ape.
Mm.
So he's not a little monkey. He's actually a little ape because he does not have a tail.
Wow. I'm lactose intolerant. Cows have a large, very, very large stomach for the size of their body. It is divided into four quadrants. that goes through different stages of digestion. So the first one, second one, third one, fourth one, different than our stomach and most animal stomachs. So a single cow can give off over 400 liter bottles of methane gas in one day. Did you hear me? 400 liter bottles of methane gas. So all you tree hugging hippies, I don't care. I love a burger.
Ironically enough, when you drink milk, it gives you gas.
Yeah.
Now, you're talking about being colorblind. You're not a bull, are you?
No, not the last time I checked.
Okay. Do bulls see red? Now, we've seen the, you know, the images where there's a matador in the ring there, and he's floating around this red cape. Mm-hmm. So bullfighting, you know, the angry bull charging at the matador's red cape. Why does the beast charge at the sight of red? Well, actually, it's not what he's doing. He's not actually charging the color red cape. He's not actually charging at the red cape. Bulls, along with other cattle, are colorblind to red. Thus, mm-hmm. the bull is likely irritated not by the cape's color, but by the cape's movement as the matador whips it around. Olé.
I knew a few cows that said they were well red. Okay, a dog's shoulder blades. Check this one out now. A dog's shoulder blades are unattached to the rest of its skeleton. They're floating shoulder blades. This allows them the flexibility to jump higher, move very quickly, and so on. But can you imagine that? Now, I want to tell everybody out there, we as humans, we have one bone that floats in our body, and it is called the hyoid bone, and it is right under here, and it actually sits there, and it protects our throat from danger, from this pen going, ah! Okay, so that is the hyoid bone, but their shoulder blades do that, which is really remarkable, dogs.
Hippopotamuses have skin that sweats pink.
Excuse me. Can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes.
Would it be hippopotami?
I don't know. Are you?
Are you a hippopotami?
I don't know. Are you? Hippos secrete a reddish, oily fluid, mm-hmm. sometimes called blood sweat.
From their anus?
No.
Oh, okay.
Blood sweat.
I didn't. It wasn't
from special glands in their skin. I guess. Hold on. I guess if they cry, it's blood, sweat, and tears. they bleed sweat from special glands in their skin. It's not actually blood. Actually, hippos most try to avoid direct sunlight. By the way, by lying in water during the day and feeding at night. Their skin is very sensitive to both drying and sunburn, so the secretion acts like an automatic skin ointment. It also protects the skin from becoming waterlogged when a hippo is in the water.
Oh, that's nice. Huh? They moisturize. They're like, I'm so upset. I'm out in the sunlight all the time. I need to moisturize.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Hold on. And edit.
No, don't edit.
So what did you say? Sorry, what did you say? I think you were trying to mimic. You're trying to imagine what a hippopotamus says.
He said, "Why you didn't hear it?" He said, "I just love moisturizing. I'm out in the sun all the time."
Crazy animal. On the Totally Useless Information Podcast, as you can imagine, as you just experienced, this is like a well-rehearsed podcast. Although it's not rehearsed.
No, it's not. This is not well-rehearsed at all. But there is something slightly scientific about it.
It is. In fact, let's go there.
Einstein was a moron. Newton was Science.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Roy.
Totally Useless Information Podcast. Now, you live in Florida, as you mentioned many times.
Certainly do.
I live in Toronto, Canada. And in Florida, I'm going to give you the weather forecast.
Mm.
Chilly winter weather brings a chance of snow, ice, and falling iguanas.
What?
In Florida, according to the National Weather Service, predictions of low temperatures, and sometimes it gets pretty cold in southern Florida, it prompts the National Weather Service of Miami to issue an unusual warning. Falling iguanas are possible tonight.
19 years I live here. I've never heard of falling iguanas, but go ahead, well, tell me.
But you're not in Miami. You're on the other side.
Thank
However,
God.
these tumbling, it must be on Miami.
Thank God.
However, those tumbling lizards won't be dead. They're not actually dead. They're not falling from because they're dead. They're just stunned by the cold. When temperatures dip into the 40s Fahrenheit or 15 or 14 degrees Celsius or lower, iguana metabolisms slow down so much that the animals become immobile and can drop out of trees. Prior historic cold snaps in the southern part of the Sunshine State bouts a raining of iguanas in 2008 and in 2018. Raining iguanas.
Wow. I wonder.
Raining iguanas. Hallelujah. You know that song.
Yeah, please stop that. You're hurting the American people. I know you Canadians don't care, but you're hurting the American people, and I won't stand for it. Scientists find 41 new species every day.
Oh,
congratulations. Now, of course, that could be, I guess, plants and all kinds of other things. But I just want to bring it out to the tree-hugging hippies who say, they're exterminating animals because of building. There's 41 new species found every day. I don't hear about 41 new species being extinct every day. So the way I see it, we're overloading with new species. Need to get rid of some, like tree hugging hippies. we could start with the tree hugging hippies.
You know what? I just thought of something. So going back to my previous facts with iguanas, I guess iguanas are not tree hugging hippies because they just fall out of the trees.
Yeah, and if the trees are extinct, what would we call them? Air hugging hippies?
I don't know. Legos in the ocean. In the United Kingdom, there are estimates that children flush some 2.5 million. Lego pieces down the toilet.
What?
This study showed between 2006 and 2016, children flushed over 2.5 million Lego pieces down the toilet.
Oh, so my father was brilliant. Brilliant. My father was brilliant. When I was a kid, I said, Dad, I want Legos. He said, go down the river.
Yes, another expression. So here's the thing, though. In a paper published on February 29th, the journal Environmental Pollution, they found that 50 castaway Lego bricks, when they trolled them from the coastlines, 50 matching bricks that never left their boxes, when they compared the two, they used x-rays and other tools to measure how much of the marine bricks had weathered away. Well, there wasn't any difference, so they figured that any Lego can survive underwater between 100 and 1,300 years before totally degrading. That's some pretty solid Legos.
Yeah, that's a real sharp scientist. Between 100 and 1,300. You'd smack him. I want to smack that guy. He couldn't get it closer. You couldn't say between 13 and 1,400 years. That's still, it's 100 years. No, this guy, I don't believe him. Okay, I think he played with Legos too long.
He's a blockhead.
Jesus. Okay, I know you're going to love this one because Nick loves everything urine. Anything that has to do with urine, Nick loves it. Scientists in China have successfully grown teeth out of stem cells found in human urine.
Wow.
You heard me right.
So hold on. So they were able to produce teeth from urine?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What if you get a cavity?
I don't know, but that urine has a bit of a bite.
So when you're thinking of travel plans, you know, you're thinking maybe I'll go to Europe, maybe I'll visit, I don't know, the Holy Land. Maybe if you're religious, maybe you'd like to visit a land down under in Australia. Mm. Well, have I got a tourist site for you. If I were a travel agent, I'd tell you, look, this is an experience like you've never had before. Tourists can now visit the control room of Chernobyl's Reactor 4, the scene of the world's worst nuclear disaster. The control room is still highly radioactive, don't you worry, and people are required to wear protective gear when inside, according to recent news reports. Mm-hmm. But Reactor 4 has been remained closed off to most of the public, except for some researchers and some cleanup workers. Now the Chernobyl tour companies have confirmed that the control room is open to the brave souls who wish to be closer to the scene of the disaster. The radiation in the room is 40,000 times higher than normal levels.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who wishes to visit the site must wear the protective suit, a helmet, a mask, and must limit their visit to just 5 minutes. Chernobyl tourist site.
So what is their advertising? Come to a vacation that's a real blast. Chernobyl.
Einstein was a moron. Newton was a jerk. Nothing is science.
On the Totally Useless Information Podcast. Yeah. Oh, yes.
That's the place to pick up. You can't pick up a girl there because you actually don't know what she looks like under the helmet and all the protective gear. You might get her home and she takes it off and you're like, oh, my God, the radiation got to you. She's like, no, this is how I always look.
No, but she glows in the dark. Hey, look, look what I just found. I just found...
What's in the mailbag? What's in the mail?
Someone said to me, look, why is it that you guys call it a mailbag? You just open up your email and print the email. I'm like, come on, work with me here. Like, it's an expression. It's theater of the mind. Close your eyes, but watch our video. Sylvia from New Jersey asks, hi, Nick and Roy. Love your show. Keep up the good work. She must be a teacher. Keep up the good work. You get a gold star.
Probably.
She wants to know, why are women's buttons on the left side and men's on the right on some clothing? So,
Me too.
I found out. During the historical periods like the Renaissance and the Victorian era, women's clothing were often more complicated than men's. The rich men often dressed themselves, but female members of the family most likely had servants to help them out put on their clothes, both out of luxury and necessity. To make it easier for servants to button up their employer's dresses right, clothiers might have started sewing buttons on the opposite side because their servants were buttoning their clothes on the opposite side. And that's why the women is on the other side. So thank you, Sylvia, from New Jersey, and I'm standing up straight now, and I hope I get an A in posture.
Well, that was good. You answered Sylvia. You know, I have no intentions of answering people that email me personally, especially bills. But anyway, I've got Vern. Vern is from South Carolina. Okay, Vern, here we go. Vern, being from the South, asks a terrible question like this. How many slaves did it take to build the pyramids?
Oh.
Okay, Vern. I got news for you. I looked into this for you. None. No slaves. People actually worked on the pyramids and got paid. It was kind of like the tree-hugging hippie liberals of their time. The pharaohs needed to put a government work program into effect, kind of like a stimulus. Okay, so the pyramids were nothing more than a social work program of its time. And it took 20 to 30,000 workers to complete the pyramid over some 10 to, they're not even sure exactly, but 10 to 18 years or something like that. The original pharaoh died before the pyramid and had to be parked somewhere before they put him in his full resting place inside the pyramid. So, okay. Interesting. Vern, thank you so much for bringing up slavery, being that you're from the South.
That's right. So, in case you want to have any of your questions answered or not, our email is tuipodcast@outlook.com.
What's in the mailbag? What's in the mail?
I'm Nick.
And I'm going crazy. I'm Roy.
And now let's go back in time.
Tablet today is history.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That's one small step for man.
What happens tomorrow is history.
Here's another shot. Anderson right in. He scores!
Swing and a belt, left field, way back, Blue Jays win it! The Blue Jays are World Series champions!
I guess every day is history. Yeah!
O-M-G. Mm-hmm. What does that stand for?
Oh my God.
You're thinking... Well, that must be like a modern sort of term, right? Because, you know, ever since social media came around and you started using...
I do know a few pumpkin farmers that use it as, oh my gourd. But
right, exactly. But OMG, the first written instance of OMG, maybe that's what's different. Now you don't write it, you just type it into a device. But the first written instance of OMG that we know of was in a letter sent to Winston Churchill by Lord Fisher in 1917.
Really?
OMG.
Really? WTF?
No, OMG.
When Columbus discovered the American continent, the Americas.
Yes. Yes.
He actually discovered a place that was inhabited by 90 million people.
Okay.
So what did he discover? He didn't discover anything. To discover something, there's nobody there. You discover an island with no people on it. You don't discover a place that has 90 million people. And I got news for you, Christopher. Can I call you Chris? Chris, a guy named Leif Erikson discovered North America 500 years before you. I guess he couldn't figure out how to get back, but he discovered America 500 years before Columbus. So there is so much mishistoric information, you know. So that's just to settle that.
So as luck would have it, look, what do I have there? Columbus and GPS. So for those of you who are listening to us or watching us for the first time, welcome and thank you. Roy and I do not rehearse, nor do we tell each other what the facts are going to be.
And I write my notes by hand.
So I don't have the exact fact as you, but I have something about Christopher Columbus too. So this is how great minds think alike.
Yes.
Did Christopher Columbus use GPS when he got lost? Well, he didn't have GPS back then, but he might as well. You know how sometimes you use a GPS and it takes you somewhere, nowhere near where you wanted to go? Well, maybe this is what happened to Columbus. This is what I'm thinking. Columbus wasn't trying to prove that the Earth was round when he set sail in 1492. He was trying to prove that sailing due west was the quickest way to get to the Far East and the treasured spice ports of India. Not only were his calculations wrong, but he and his crew would have surely died if they had not accidentally bumped into a cluster of Caribbean islands that Columbus believed to be coastal India. In fact, in all the voyages to the New World, he continued to think that he had a hit on some part of Asia. With how many people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 90 million people, and that's why they call them Indians.
That's right. See?
Yeah.
Useful. Hey, you know what? That's useful information. Right, sometimes we talk about useless information, but sometimes we give you new, useful information for you.
You'll very rarely hear that noise, folks, because most of our information is ridiculously useless. But Christopher Columbus, this guy was a character. I mean, he found the wrong place. I don't even understand how that all worked out, and we gave him a special day. We went to a school with his name.
Named that. That's right. We went to Christopher Columbus High School in the Bronx. There you go.
God. Remember the Columbus Day Parade that we were in?
Yeah. Yeah, we were in the Bronx. We were part of the chorus, the senior chorus, they would call us. And our leader, Dr. Dzik, yes, he was a doctor of music. And we would march in the parade, and we would sing Funiculi, Funicula, and we would sing the Italian national anthem, because Columbus, of course, was Italian, from the great country of Italy.
Napoleon. I'm going to go on with history. Napoleon was thought to have been a short guy who was very power hungry. Mm-hmm. In fact, they named the complex the Napoleonic Complex after him. But in reality, Napoleon was an average height. They believe he was about 5'6", 5'7", which was the actual average height of a Frenchman at the time, except for one thing. The average imperial guard in the army was extremely tall. So he always appeared with the guards around him, and he always appeared short, much shorter. In fact, they actually would note that, wow, look at how short he is in person. And so the term Napoleon was a short guy comes about. He was not. He was average height. Now, did he keep his one hand in his breast pocket? I don't know. Maybe he was playing with his own nipple. I don't know.
No, I read somewhere that he had ulcers and that he kept his hand in his jacket so that he could calm the pain a little bit.
Oh, well, he should have just stopped eating all that crap.
That's right. It's the French food.
All that rich French food.
Astoria Hotel in New York City once had its own private railroad track at Grand Central Station. So guests that would secretly enter and exit New York City, that's the way that they would go in and out. Largely abandoned now, it operates only when the president is in town in case the need arises for an emergency exit. There you go. I just blew it now. I just blew the president's cover. So this once it was a private railroad track between Grand Central Station and the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, but now they use it only when the president needs it. But you never heard that from us.
That's pretty cool. Now we know it's there. You blew the whole thing. I have to give you my teaser. This is very important.
Yes.
The loudest sound in human history was made in 1883.
Wow.
It was a massive eruption. A massive, not erection, a massive eruption, or both, of Krakatoa. Krakatoa exploded, and it could be heard 3,000 miles away, or for you Canadians, 4,800 kilometers. I do my math.
Thank you.
It could be heard 3,000 miles away. Can you imagine the sheer sound that that must have put out? Not to mention, it's fun to say eruption, erection, and Krakatoa.
Well, that's all the time we have right now. And
I got to say one thing before you go. You shorted me. I had one science fact that you did not let me say. And it had something to do with you and me being a nice guy. Science. It could also be food, but we didn't have food today. So eating salmon will help you, Nick. It will help you grow hair faster.
What?
You heard me. You heard me. So you better get out there and go in the Canadian rivers out there like bears. You just wrestle them down and bite them and take them home with you. So
we don't have rivers.
Well,
we have
listen. This will help you grow hair, Nick. Okay? You can also eat yellow peppers and oysters. Okay? It seems that the zinc and the vitamin C helps grow hair, but also if you eat enough oysters, you can be a superstar in other places, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So please, folks out there, send Nick salmon. You can wrap it up in paper or whatever, throw it in a Ziploc bag, throw it in the mail, send it to him. Okay? He needs all the fish he can get. He needs some salmon.
I guess every day is history.
Yeah! Ow! Well, folks, this goes so fast, but that's all the time that we have for this episode of Totally Useless Information Podcast.
Don't you worry, because we have more for you next time.
That's right. And every Thursday, we come out with a new episode. And you got to hit that subscribe button. This way you don't miss. It makes it so much easier. And please, please, guys, Facebook, share it with your friends. Let them see some of this. They're going to love it. Please tell a friend about the trend.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Roy.
Thanks for listening.